Do we have a favorite tog recipe?
If you can mess them up.
Yeah, he's kind of answered that.
I pretty much bake everything, so. Yeah.
You can't mess a tog up, I don't
think. Yeah, they're pretty delicious no matter how you deal with it.
Tog and sea bass. The way that I like to do them is I like to take them and I don't fillet them. I scale them and I gut them and I leave them pretty much intact. And I'll put them in the oven on broil and I stand their fish, I stand their dorsal fin up with a stick of butter, so that as the stick of butter melts, it just runs down. And put like rosemary, Old Bay, sea salt, that's about it. And then just broil it until the eyes dry all up. And then you take that joker out, nice. Put it on your plate, stand it up, it's a really cool presentation for it. And
all fancy with it.
Shred it, dude. My kid. She's 7 years old, and I swear she ate a whole 4 pound sea bass that way. There was nothing left.
I wish we could catch sea bass in the inside of the bay, like peeping. I fucking love that. I would love.
Did you see the thing that it was Skipper put it on Facebook today with the 50,000 pounds in 50 minutes of sea bass, but we're not allowed to fish for them.
Yeah, you can't go recreationally fishing. Man, it's just like the stripers. You can't catch stripers in the bay, and the guys can go set up nets at the river as they're swimming in. It's fucking stupid. I'm not against commercial fishing. I know that it's necessary.
Well, they were saying something about, remember the nets with the sturgeon. They were saying that might curve.
Good. Hopefully they can stop that with whatever they can use.
If they want to net
those fish, net them coming out after they spawn.
If we're talking about the commercial fishery for striped bass, we've got the rest of the East Coast just pissed off at Virginia because of the way that we allow our guys to net stripers that are on their way in the rivers to spawn.
Right, that's what I saw. Yeah.
If they would, if the feds would give us some sort of allowance to fish for those fish in the ocean, it could be much more spread out, and we wouldn't be wiping out schools of fish. You know,
schools of fish are heading to breed.
Yeah, you'll never hear me say that a fishery needs to be taken from a commercial fisherman, because you know those guys work hard, just as hard as anybody else, and they require those fisheries to live. Most of those guys are going to be the best stewards that you have for the fishery. You know, because they're not dumb. They know that. If they catch them all, they're not going to have them next year, and that's what they use to make their living.
Right.
With that being said, the state setting it up and allowing the commercial fishery of rockfish the week before they spawn is about the most asinine thing that I have ever heard of in my life.
Yeah.
And it has the entire East Coast furious with us with striped bass, because striped bass spawn in the Chesapeake Bay. They come into the bay to spawn, and they get wiped out a day, 2 days, 3 days before they go spawn. You know, we've been growing these fish for 15, 20 years, and the day before they spawn, we're going to wipe them out. I mean, that's the stupidest thing ever. And the other, you know, I don't know. Striped bass is a very difficult one. I believe there should be a whole lot more access to the fish for us in Virginia, but I believe that there needs to be regulations implemented that do protect the fish greater, if that makes sense. We need...
No, it totally makes sense. Like, opening it up to where they have been wintering offshore, like 20 miles offshore, but keeping it the one per, you know, or a tag even. I still like the idea, because that limits it. That limits it because...
Well,
a lot of your ocean fish don't go over that also.
And I'll tell you this too, is that, you know, everybody thinks that gill netting is this indiscriminate fishery that just kills everything in the water, and that is not the case. These guys with the gill nets, they're professionals at doing what they do, they know how to do it, and they can set their nets out with the proper size to where they're not out there killing the biggest giant fish in the group.
So
they can set their nets up for 15 to 30 pound fish, and that's what the majority of what they're going to catch is.
Croaker nets and croaker spot, and it's that big, and you see them come up, it's all they have is croaker and spot. Maybe a small black drum because that size, but you know, that type of thing, it's really spot and croaker.
But they need to set it up so that the fisheries have more access throughout the year, so that these guys don't have to rely on that one
bum rushing when they're
in the early in the year to be their only payday.
If you got a tag for X number of stripers, why not go wherever you have to go to get them? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, as
I'm saying, don't net
in there. But I'm saying, like, the reason they have to net them there is because they can't.
The same could be said for the EEZ. You know, if Virginia has this quota for stripers, which, if you look at the numbers for the last couple of years, the Atlantic Ocean quota has been at or near zero for Virginia for striped bass. We're not catching them because they don't exist where we can catch them anymore.
Right.
But if Virginia has an ACL, which is, you know, say it's a million pounds of striped bass every year for our recreational and charter take, what the hell difference does it make if that amount is caught right along the beach or whether that's caught 3 miles out? What difference does that make?
Right.
You know, if we're allowed to catch a million pounds, why aren't we being allowed to go catch that million pounds?
That same school of fish that's being caught 12 miles off Virginia Beach was being caught 2 miles off New Jersey.
Well, they've got this magic fence that says, right, you know, that we're not allowed to fish here. Okay, well, let's say that 1 year something changes on it and we're still allowed to catch one a day. I could run, if the fish are within 3 miles, I can run realistically 3 or 4 trips a day. If the fish are there, the charters are going to be there. What the hell is to say that those fish don't come in 1 year and I just absolutely annihilate them?
Right.
You know,
two per person, four trips.
It's one now.
Okay. Four trips.
Yeah, but if I go run 4 trips a day on them and go catch 6 fish 4 times a day, that's 24 fish. You've got these boats that are bay boats that come down and put 20 people at a time. If the fish are there, the people are going to be there. Yeah. If those fish come in 1 year, what in the hell is to say that we don't wipe out the entire East Coast stock of striper?
You come across those fish in a school and you have 20 rods out, 20 rods are going down. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't... The number of bites you get just depends on the number of baits you have in the water.
It's narrow-minded management that does not give consideration to either the fisherman or the fishery.
Right.
It's just simply a closure for the sake of closure. You know, it's a power grab because basically they're shutting Virginia out of the fishery. And meanwhile, you know, northern states, Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New York, striped bass generally, at the majority of the time that striped bass are there, striped bass can be found within 3 miles of, you know, in legal waters where they can be fished for. In the same respect, now, a striped bass, once you get down to, New Jersey had them really good this year, but I would say New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, and North Carolina.
They jump the fence.
They no longer migrate within the EEZ, and as a result, we get shut out of the fishery. We don't get to take part in the fishery, and we essentially throw our quota away while they get to catch their quota, and it's very unfair to us.
When you talk about federal waters, it's all everybody probably knows, but it is illegal to even fish for them.
Right. Yes, you're not even allowed to target them.
It's not like in the bay when they stay in the bay and the bay season goes out, and you can go out and you can have a fucking heyday if you would like and catch and release all the fish you want. There are people out there watching you to make sure that that's not what you're trying to do.
Yeah,
is to catch up. They're
a big
out,
deal.
Right. It's a big deal. It's cost a lot of people a lot of money.
Times they've migrated. Their migration patterns have changed where they are just hanging offshore.
Yeah, I've heard.
We've had the east wind. We've had the not mild winters. The east wind. Everything that you would think, the bait, the whales, everything is inshore, and there are no goddamn fish there.
I've heard that ever since...
It's just bait change.
Ever since Sandy, you know, I've heard a lot of the commercial fishermen, and it kind of makes sense to me, is that they said that up north, right there in the Virginia-Maryland line, the winter quarter shoal is up there. And evidently, something changed with Sandy when that came through there, and it changed the way that shoal is made, and basically, instead of funneling the fish down the coast, now the fish get funneled out 15 miles off the beach. And if that's the case, it's a geological change that has, and I don't think it's far-fetched. I think it's completely possible something has changed with the current and has changed, and it just, instead of sending them fish to us, it shifts them right out to sea.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that we used to see the fish come out of the bay. You know, we would get a run of fish that were leaving the bay and migrating out of the bay, and we found that over the last several years, those fish no longer migrate out of the bay. Those fish reside in the bay year-round, and...
Shit, this year they stayed so far up there.
They didn't even migrate
into the southern bay this year.
Even on the cold years that we've had where everything is iced over, they're in the holes. The big ones are in, like, holes in, the, like, Rappahannock. I mean,
they're not even up there. There's nothing for them to eat, which...
There's speckled trout that are staying there, too.
In those deep holes. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of my argument with the menhaden comes to the reduction and the change in what these fish are feeding on with forage, because the striped bass used to follow the menhaden right out of the bay.
Right.
Now there are no... menhaden occurring in the bay at the time when the striped bass get here. A lot of these fish that we were seeing in the middle bay this year, they had sea lice on them, which means that they came from the ocean. They didn't come out of the rivers, some of them.
Right.
Those fish will also come down the C&D canal. Those fish will come down the C&D canal, right, and they'll get to a certain place and they'll stop. The reason they stop there is because that's going to be their wintering spot, because it is, if you look at those places where we're fishing up there, it's very close to the rivers where they're spawning. They come down there, and instead of chasing food further down the bay, there's nothing for them to chase. So they just stay right there in that spot. Then when it comes time to spawn, they shoot in the river, do their thing, and get going.
Yeah.
You know? And then we have a lot of resident fish up there. But the bottom line is that even with these, you know, we had a couple of trips this year where we went and caught schoolie striped bass. If schoolie striped bass, I mean, if you use any lure for that fish that resembles a menhaden in any way, it's going to eat it. Mm-hmm. It is obviously a striped bass.
Menhaden or an eel?
A menhaden. Yes, I mean, I'm talking about a striper this big.
Yeah. Yep.
If you use anything that in any way resembles a menhaden, it's getting eaten. There's not a question about it. We caught these fish on baits that look like menhaden. We bring them into the boat. At the end of the day, we're at home cleaning these fish at the dock. We open their bellies up, and there is everything but menhaden in their bellies.
Anchovies.
And there is the reason being is because there are not menhaden there. Striped bass eat menhaden.
Yeah.
That's not a question. Well, if there's no menhaden there, they're not going to eat them.
I mentioned before that their diets have obviously changed by you looking at pictures of them back in the day, back in their first heyday, when they were slobbier, they had more fat on them because of the menhaden. Now the old timers are saying that they're leaning out, they're getting more and lean.
They used to catch, and you know, everything works in cycles, but you know, the gray trout were wiped out for a number of various reasons. You know, it wasn't one particular fishery. It was just poor management that led to the end of gray trout. I don't ever blame fishermen for when these fisheries get wiped out, because the reason we have fisheries management is to prevent these fisheries from getting wiped out. You cannot blame a fisherman for wanting to make money. But when the gray trout got wiped out, guess what went away was the Chesapeake Bay bluefish fishery. They used to catch bluefish all up the bay. Not like little bluefish that we catch in the summer.
I've never caught one.
I used to see them when I was a kid. I'm 45. So when I was a kid, it was my grandfather and my dad. It was only bluefish. We would troll for bluefish and then bottom fish for spotted croaker. Yeah. That was the only big fish. But since that left and then the bluefish stopped, the stripers have...
It isn't that bluefish don't exist anymore.
No, they're not coming inside the bay.
There's miles and miles of them, but they live out offshore, and the reason being is because when they were coming into the Chesapeake Bay, their diet was gray trout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to see it here. I grew up here in Ocean View. I used to see them run.
Yeah, they run the gray trout up onto the beach.
Giant ones like this, and just shred them in half. Yeah, like small, gray trout like this.
They don't occur anymore, so the bluefish don't occur anymore either. And the same thing is happening with striped bass in Menhaden, and we're watching it in front of our eyes, and as opposed to the striped bass, as opposed to the bluefish moving from coming inside of the bay and feeding on gray trout, now they live offshore. And the same thing can be said with striped bass, whereas the striped bass used to come into the bay and feed on menhaden. Now the menhaden don't occur there, so now the striped bass occur offshore,
yeah.
And they're not eating menhaden out there. Those fish that are out there are eating herring, which is a completely separate food source right. that doesn't come in to the bay.
Right.
That's where the herring go to, then they go way up north and migrate into the shallow waters to spawn.
Yeah. And that's so awesome because I didn't put that one together with the great trout and the blues.
Yep.
That's such a good point because that's, you look at cycles and you look at the way, not only cycles with one individual fish, but the pairs of fish, the predator and the prey cycle.
Yep.
I didn't even fucking put that together. That's awesome. Thank you for that. That is fucking, that's a whole nother realm of.
Everybody gets into me about, you know, about the bone that I pick with Omega. And that's what it is. I don't have a problem with Omega fishermen making a living. It's that they concentrate their fishery in this area, and this area cannot sustain the amount of pressure that they put on it.
Yep.
And as a result, all of our fisheries suffer from the strain that's put on to menhaden.
Yep.
If they say that the amount of menhaden that they catch is fine, and the menhaden stock will be fine. I'm perfectly fine with them catching that. However, they need to allocate that up and down the coast so that it can be absorbed by each individual area, as opposed to having our localized small area just beat to death with
yeah.
menhaden fishing until there's nothing left.
Yeah, the Northern Atlantic NASMFC, whatever the fuck it is,
yes.
tells you the menhaden population is great and that everything is fine.
They are
coast-wide. Well, look, you're fucking... because they're not taking them from there. They're taking them from here.
It's really concentrated.
It's called ecosystem-based management. And right now, we don't have ecosystem-based management. Our fisheries management and regulation is so archaic and so outdated. We have really smart people who regulate our fisheries, but the politics that are involved with it cause it to be regulated using very old-school methods. And if they used ecosystem-based management, ecosystem-based management takes into consideration of the effects of removing one fish from the fishery upon all of those other fisheries. So if they removed all of the menhaden, what's going to be the rest of the effect on the ecosystem? If ecosystem-based management was implemented up and down the coast, we would see fishermen, recreational, charter, commercial, everyone would see much better fisheries because at that point, our fisheries would be managed to optimum yield, which is supposed to be the goal of fisheries management
right.
to begin with. It's not the goal for fisheries management is not to have, you know, this restricted, that restricted, the other thing restricted. The goal for fisheries management is to have optimum yield. Optimum yield, optimum benefit for recreational, charter, and commercial fishermen. Those fish are a resource that are there for us to use. And fisheries management job is to preserve those fisheries for us to have. Taking them away doesn't do that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. My view of the regulations is I want more of a look towards more sustainability of the bay. Not so much of a point of view from a pool, what we could use, but what is healthiest for the bay.
Absolutely. That's ecosystem-based management.
Yeah.
Ecosystem-based management considers all facets of life in
right.
the bay.
And you look at the crabs. They stopped people from digging crabs out of their holes in the middle of the winter. The population went absolutely crazy. You couldn't sell crabs for fucking $2 a bushel
yeah, right.
for a year. Then they got balanced back out because they were like the crabs couldn't eat.
Yeah.
you know, and it balances back out, everything ends up, so you need, it's all about balance.
Yeah, yeah.
Ecosystem-based, well, balance.
These, one of my arguments with, another one of my arguments with the menhaden fishery has been that menhaden are filter feeders.
Mm-hmm.
An adult menhaden filters out something like 5 gallons of water per minute. And, you know, they've done all these studies that say that menhaden don't affect water quality. But then at the same time, they remove all the menhaden, and then they go, well, the fisheries aren't here because there's a water quality problem. Well, no shit, there's a water quality problem. You just took out all the filter feeders, yeah, you know? Right. I mean, the quality of the water goes down when you don't have... if you did the math on just the amount of fish that they report, you know, if you say a one-pound menhaden filters 5 gallons of water a minute. Okay. They catch 380 million pounds a year. 380 million times 5 is billions of gallons per minute getting filtered by the menhaden just that they kill every year. And there's no way that you can tell me that that does not have an effect on the water quality in the entire bay.
They talked about our inlet health, our local inlet health, because of the oyster projects that are going on. The consensus shows that our water is getting better.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got all of these oyster programs going on all over the place, and another filter feeder, just cleaning water constantly.
You can see them. What they're doing when they're moving, their mouths are open, just doing
it. Have you ever seen the thing online, on the YouTube video, where they have the tank that has... They take the tank of water and they put oysters into it, and they and within like 5 minutes, it's just filtered. Clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, when we had what's his name on the other day, we talked about that, the menhaden, what was his name, menhaden guy,
CFC.
Yeah. We had him on the other day. We talked a lot about it, and you know, there's hope for that.
It's a losing battle.
Yeah,
it's impossible to gain leeway on these people, because you're fighting against big money, and you're fighting against political power, and you're fighting against people who, when the state says that they're going to regulate them, these people show up in droves. And, you know, no fisheries regulator, all these fisheries regulators know that the way that things are going down right now is not right. But, you know, from speaking to the fisheries regulators, they have flat out told me, you know, how am I supposed to write a regulation that's going to harm these people's livelihoods when there's 200 of them standing in the room when we're making the regulations,
right,
you know, telling us that it's going to ruin their livelihood.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can't, if I were a politician, I'm not going to stand there and say, ha ha, screw you.
Yeah, fuck you guys.
You're out of a job. Yeah, what you're doing is wrong. Later.
Screw you for the future of a fish.
We know that you've been doing, your family's been doing this for 130 years, but see you later. You know, that doesn't work like that, you know?
Yeah.
But there needs to be alternative methods that would disperse the catch throughout the entire coast, you know? And
if they have to leave out of Reedville and go fucking up the coast for 2 days.
Fuel's $1.50 right now.
Go up the coast for 2 days. Whatever you gotta fucking do,
have a station outside of Delaware Bay or something.
Well, the problem is that no other states will.
They're not gonna allow them to do it.
Right.
No other states will allow landings, and no other states have the plants to do the reduction anymore. So basically, they've got to go out of Reedville, and they have to return to Reedville because that's the only place where they can bring their catch back to.
What do you mean by reduction? Is that?
I mean, they have to have a processing plant to process their fish that they have tens of millions of pounds. Number one, none of these other states will allow them to show up to a dock.
What is done with this shit? Is it mashed into like?
It's boiled. It's so disgusting.
Right.
It's boiled into just a nothing. Boil it until it disintegrates, and then take the oil out of it. It's gross. Yeah. Then the rest of it is used to make fertilizer and livestock feed. And I mean, a menhaden is disgusting before you start going.
Oh my god, it's fucking gross as fuck. I'm fishing on the pier. A dude threw a cast net, right? And fills his net up on the pier and pulls it up and lays him out on the deck, and we're all putting our bait in our cooler, and these Asians run up screaming spot and start throwing shit in the cooler like everybody else. And oh wait, nobody says anything.
those things what
get them fellas some rolls of toilet paper. See you later, guys. Enjoy your dinner.
God. The colon blast.
Yeah. Yeah, those things are totally what made me quit Kobe fishing.
So what are your what are your favorite trips to charter? Do you money wise, the inshore quick two a day thing works, but
I don't really have any one particular.
The overnighter is not your favorite, cuz I asked Kenny on the
there's certain aspects of every trip, but I'll tell you, I love charter fishing. I love having people on the boat. You know, I love having new people on the boat and teaching them how to fish. I love having kids on the boat, and I love seeing how kids react when you catch them fish that they've never seen before. I love taking people offshore, you know, and coming home with a box full. I love marlin fishing. You know, I love every aspect of charter fishing. And, you know, what I do, I'm a part of a dying breed, you know, and I don't think that what I do will be here in 20 years. And this is, you know, this is the career path that I chose. And I love it, and I hate seeing my way of life getting taken out from under me. And, you know, that's what goes on, you know, that's what's going on with this cobia thing, and it's kind of gotten to a point where we as fishermen need to put our foot down, and we need to do something to preserve our way of life, because if we don't, it's not going to be here. They're making it so difficult just to be and just to exist, and as a result, I'm not the only person that loves what I do for a living, and, you know, stuff like this cobia regulation. I mean, Zach's one of my good friends.
We're trying to get Zach on the podcast, but he lives up there on the peninsula. It's really hard to get people across this bridge.
He's going to lose his whole operation if this thing happens.
Yeah, yeah, no, a lot of guys.
Austin lives on the other. This 7-Eleven right here, you that's know, next to my house. Austin lives on the other side.
I mean, this is
like my neighbor.
It's an industry around a fishery that's been developed in the last couple of years, and now they're getting it snatched.
These guys don't love fishing any less than I do. You know, and they all are trying just to make it like I am. And doing this is directly going to put them out of business. You know, people aren't going to charter the boat to go catch and release cobia. They're not going to charter their boat.
I don't want to catch and release a cobia. I don't want to deal with cobia.
People aren't going to charter their boat for something else. They've created their business around that fishery. And now the rug's getting ripped out from under them.
Yeah.
And cobia is just one of many. It's one of many fisheries that's being improperly regulated that is going to have a negative effect on fishermen, and it's happening with recreational fishermen, it's happening with charter fishing, it's happening with commercial fishermen, and across the board it needs to stop. We need to properly regulate our fisheries so that people can fish, you know.
Jake Howell's for mayor.
Yeah. Jake Hiles for mayor.
That's right. Sounds good, don't it? Mayor Jake Hiles. Let's wrap it up. We've been on for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So that's good.
It just flies by, doesn't it?
Yeah, man, it was cool. I appreciate you guys having me on here.
Yeah, man. We'll do it again
sometime.
Yeah, yeah, especially if you're not fishing and, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to get with the guys that run charters and fish for a living. Like, you charter
right now, you know?
It's just not the easiest.
I was supposed to have a funeral to go to this evening. You know, even when I am here, it's like when I'm out of town, I get back and I've got a million things to do, and
speaking
it just
of
so
which,
happened.
You knew Jim personally.
Great guy.
Yeah. I never met him. I knew him from Facebook, and of course you hear stories of Captain Brinsfield all over. He ran the boat?
Jill Carey. And lately he, for the last several years, he's been running a gillnet boat and doing some commercial fishing. I'm working out a deal right now to buy his commercial boat to help his family. And, I'm going to take it over and try and keep Jim's legacy with that thing. And, mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a terrible situation. He'll be missed. He was a great guy, and he'll be missed.
I mean, that was a tragedy. It was something with a burn barrel of an extreme tragedy. This was not unexpected. There was no illness. Right. This was unexpected by his whole family
blew up
and everything.
He got burned up pretty bad, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And succumbed to those injuries.
Yeah.
From what I understand. Yeah. Yeah. I knew him too. I didn't know him as well as you did. You were friends with him, but I knew him from the scene. You know, from the fishing scene. There,
so. Was he around Virginia Beach? Was he around Murphy's?
He worked at Murphy's.
Oh, okay.
He was in the kitchen at Murphy's. He provided all the seafood to Murphy's. He provided firewood to Murphy's.
Okay.
He was, as much as I go in there, Tom that owns Murphy's is a very good friend of mine. Murphy's is a great place. I go in there a lot. I love it there. Jim was a part of Murphy's, and I'm really gonna miss seeing him there. The fact that, for the last 3 months, every time that I seen him, he'd joke me about my hair and my haircut, saying the last time that I saw him, he told me that I better come to Murphy's after I get my haircut, because if they didn't do a good enough job, he was going to take a weed whacker and fix it,
Yep, that sounds like...
Yeah.
Great guy. We're going to miss him. It just seems our fishing community has had a lot of tragedies.
It's been rough lately, man.
It's been a long winter, and I'm really looking forward to summer getting
here. Yeah. There's a GoFundMe page for that.
There is.
Also, to help support his family. I guess...
It can be found very easily. Just type up Jim Brinsfield.
Brinsfield, yeah. Captain Jim. It's going to come up.
Yeah. We'll see it.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, man. Yep. Thank you for coming on. Yep, thanks to our podcast sponsors, Yak Attack at yakattack.us and MyDVDs at KaiKevin.com. And check out Matador Charters, Jay Kyles at MatadorCharters.com. Later.
Thanks, guys.